Today's episode of Locked On MLB is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code Locked On. You'll get 20% off your next order.
You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans. Welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast where we talk about all of Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. On today's episode, I am cleaning the basket of Sunday requests. I've got a bunch of them. I'm clearing them out. I'm starting anew in a brand new year. And so I have a bunch of questions which can't take up a whole episode, but we'll get through as many of them as we can and move on, okay? Because it's been an interesting week. This show is available on the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available wherever you get your podcasts. And when you're staying at home during these times, let's just call them that, be sure to tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB, or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball with Scott Cullen and the brand new Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q and handicap expert Lee Sterling. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On MLB Pod. I'm your pal Sully. You can send your Sunday requests, your Sully Sunday requests, to Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. So yeah, it is the 10th day of January. It's been a crazy week. And also just in terms of baseball, that you're seeing that the New York Mets have acquired Francisco Lindor and Carlos Carrasco from the Cleveland Indians. Say that 10 times fast. And this is a great move for the Mets. I caution everybody in thinking that automatically it means a great return and all-star moments for the Mets, because players have switched from one team to another and not have responded. Hell, I remember the Carlos Baerga was one of the elite infielders in baseball in 1995, was acquired by the Mets, and things didn't go so well when he came over to the Mets. But Lindor is a player who's in his prime. Lindor is a player who is a Gold Glove Silver Slugger. He didn't have a great 60 games, but as I keep pointing out, it's 60 games. If you said, okay, it's Memorial Day, and Lindor has an OPS of 750, but he has 8 home runs and he could heat up, that would be something we would all nod our heads at. Yeah, he'll probably have a better final two-thirds of the season. It just didn't happen. He certainly has durability. He played all 60 games and had the most plate appearances in the American League. He's a wonderful defender. He can do it all on the field. He's got power. He's got speed. He scores tons of runs, which I do look at. He steals bases, which is refreshing because I love stolen bases in baseball. And I think the fans in New York are going to enjoy him. Now, I'm going to tease this Wednesday's episode right now. And that is to say my what if. What if Wednesday, I'm not going all the way back to the 1920s or 30s. I'm going all the way back to 2016 and an at-bat that Francisco Lindor had that changed the trajectory, if it had gone differently, of Cleveland, of Chicago, and of the free agent class of 2016 and the Hall of Fame consideration of many players and two managers. Let's get on to clearing the cache, as we say, of the Sunday requests that I've got over the past few weeks. By the way, Jeff Cohen, who is at Jeff Cohen 41, he is always, and I mean always, contributing questions here because he's a really great baseball fan, and he is he has really great points of view and really interesting thoughts. Well, he is also a podcaster himself, and he is one of the hosts of Baseball and Barbecue, and you know, we've been back and forth and back and forth. I realize he's never been on the podcast. I just use his questions all the time. So I'm teasing another upcoming episode. Jeff Cohen, instead of sending me questions via Twitter, is going to appear on an upcoming episode. I think that's going to be a heck of a lot of fun. Just clearing house a little bit on some of the things that happened. Tommy Lasorda is the next face who's going to be included in the In Memoriam video. Tommy Lasorda did some wonderful things as a baseball manager. He did some things as a human being that I was not a gigantic fan of, but I am going to include him in the In Memoriam montage because of his impact on the game of baseball. And also, this is just, you know, 7 months to go before I unveil this upcoming video. And because you have to do it at the All-Star game. And I realize I could, if I wanted to, because it's my rules, it's my video. It's not like I'm adhering to the laws of the land. I could just simply say, hey, you know, I'm going to unveil this on opening day from now on. But no, it's an All-Star game tradition for your pal Sully. And this is, I'd like to keep it that way. I like to have certain rhythms of the years be consistent. And so it's got 7 more months and it's already going to include Tom Seaver, Tommy Lasorda, Joe Morgan, Bob Gibson, Whitey Ford, Phil Niekro, which other one? Dick Allen. There's one other big one I'm missing, just doing rattling them off at the top of my head. So, you know, I'm looking up and I see some people like Willie Mays is now our oldest living Hall of Famer. I go, Willie, stay with us. Stay with us, Rachel Robinson. Stay with us, Henry Aaron. Stay with us, Whitey Herzog. Stay with us, Carl Yastrzemski, who's had several heart surgeries over the years and is not a spring chicken. Just stay with us, please, please. It's going to be emotional enough. But Jeff sent me something, which I found kind of an interesting overall concept of a question, which is, what makes a player over or underrated? And I almost think that that's too open-ended a question because it's subjective. It's what you think of a player. But I think there's a common thread in terms of how we rate a player in our head. And it's funny, I've been reading the incredible biography of Roberto Clemente over the last, as I'm working on my October 1972 project. You know, Roberto Clemente is a major part of any discussion of what happened in October of 1972. And the biography written by David Moranis, I think that's how you pronounce his name, I've just been totally, totally engulfed in. And one of the things that I found interesting, and the fact that I'm reading this book, that I remember this Sunday request that Jeff sent actually a few weeks ago, made me think about it again. And one of the reasons why Clemente was so incredibly underrated in his career was twofold. First of all, he played in Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh was not the media hub that New York and Los Angeles were. But another aspect was there was a lot of the writers in Pittsburgh in the early 60s and the late 50s who had a very, very hard time grasping the fact that their best player was not only dark-skinned, but also Puerto Rican. And they would, you know, praise the likes of, you know, Bill Mazeroski, and they would praise the likes of Dick Grote and Don Hoke and Vernon Law, all these people, you know, Roy Face, all these people would be showered upon their praise. But Roberto, because he didn't speak to them, because he didn't speak the language, you know, that he didn't get the press. But the other reason is that he did not burst out of the gate a great player. He had a very good second year with the Pirates, but he didn't hit the flashy home runs. He didn't hit double-digit home runs until 1960. He didn't steal a ton of bases. He didn't have the stats that normally capture people's eye. And for the first 5 or 6 years of his career, he was under the radar and had a lot of injuries. He had a bad neck that he got from a car accident and had the reputation of being someone who didn't speak, wasn't friendly with the reporters, and didn't have the great numbers. And so when he began to emerge as a legit MVP contender, winning 4 batting titles, hitting home runs, starting to steal more bases, having them, leading the league in hits and playing a mind-boggling defense in right field, people were not quick to put him up there with Henry Aaron, with Willie Mays, with Frank Robinson, with Vada Pinson, with all the other elite outfielders of the time. He was underrated. And there were all the social factors about that. But then I started thinking about players who can be overrated, that people keep wanting to think of as great long after they stop being great. The love and that someone like Matt Harvey got, or Dwight Gooden got over the years, or Tim Lincecum when he, long after he was an effective pitcher, was still being talked about as if he was a great pitcher in San Francisco. He just needed one more great game to sort of spark everything again. And I realize one of the things that makes a player overrated or underrated is our first impression. If someone comes out of the gate and is playing great ball right out of the gate, like Freddie Lynn did in the early, in the mid-70s, like another Red Sox, Nomar Garciaparra did in 1997 when he was the rookie of the year. When you start looking at people who are rookies of the year and how long people cling to that image of them, how long do we still look at, oh yes, they're a great player because that's how they first made their impression upon us. Someone like Ron Kittle, I think about Ron Kittle because he's brought up a bunch of times on my all-time favorite podcast, which is Never Not Funny. And Jimmy Pardo, the host of Never Not Funny, is a big-time Chicago White Sox fan. And he has talked about White Sox fans' love of Ron Kittle. And to this day, he remains an extraordinarily popular player amongst White Sox fans. He was the rookie of the year in 1983, the year they went to the playoffs. And after that year, he had an okay 84 season. And in terms of home runs, his batting average and the OPS went into the dumpster. And after that, he was an adequate platoon DH. And he played less than 10 full seasons in baseball, and yet has this great, great reputation amongst White Sox fans because of the first impression he made. Now let's go the opposite. I talked about Roberto Clemente. I remember a few years ago, I started thinking, wait, is Adrian Beltre a Hall of Famer? Adrian Beltre can't be a Hall of Famer. And I think you're hard pressed to find anyone now who doesn't think that Adrian Beltre is a Hall of Famer. He's got 3,166 hits, 477 home runs, was a Gold Glove third baseman, and one of the great Texas Rangers of all time. Now, keep in mind, he emerged as a rookie with the 1998 Dodgers, and he played with the Dodgers for 7 seasons before landing in Seattle. He had that one year where he hit 48 home runs, but that just looked like a fluke year. And we all kind of look around mid-2000s, suddenly his home run total doubled. And then when he went to Seattle, he was not the superstar that he looked like he was going to be. He had one great year in Boston, but by that point he was 31 years old. And it took him getting his 3,000th hit to make me realize, wait a minute, he's a Hall of Famer. And then you look at his numbers and you look at how many great years he had, year in and year out, especially in Texas. And you're like, yeah, he is. He truly is. But that first impression that I had, that he was this young player for the Dodgers who was okay, but he had one fluke big season, made me underrate him the rest of his career. I do think that first impressions make a gigantic factor on whether or not you find a player overrated or underrated. So Jeff Cohen at Jeff Cohen 41. That's my response to your question, because I think it's a philosophical question at that. And so I would put my money on, if you are someone who is going to overrate someone, don't put too much of your bet on a player just as they burst out, because sometimes they can develop as Roberto Clemente and Adrian Beltre did. And speaking of bets, we're ready for some football. And look, I know nothing about football. I'm not an NFL guy, but I do watch the playoffs. And even though I could not name a single player on the Buffalo Bills, I want to see the Buffalo Bills win the Super Bowl. Why? Because Buffalo fans deserve it. And they look pretty good. They won their first playoff game, right? Maybe they're a sure bet. So if you're going to make a bet, there's only one place that has you covered and one place that we trust. And that's betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This could be the ultimate time, not just for Bills fans, but for anyone who enjoys sports, college football, basketball. We got baseball coming up eventually. Get into the action and don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook expert. And when you win, and maybe when the Buffalo Bills win the Super Bowl, they could shower themselves with champagne or dump beer or spray bubbly all over the place. But you know how I hope they celebrate the Super Bowl? With a Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar out there. Great flavors. You like flavors? I like flavors. Who doesn't like flavors? German chocolate? Boom. Raspberry? Yum. Mint brownie? Yes. Carrot cake? Man. Cherry Barcia, avoiding a lawsuit, and caramel brownie. They're covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft, they're easy to chew, but they're healthy. If you're a health-conscious person trying to lose or maintain weight and want to indulge in a delicious treat, you want something low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, and great for the keto diet, then Built Bars are for you. I love coconut almond, and that has 18 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, 5 grams of net carb. Built Bar can offer you a cooler purchase while supplies last. Go to BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Say it with me, BuiltBar.com. Betting on the NFL with the Bills moving on doesn't have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get daily picks and quick hitting advice to make your smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, let's see what other Sunday requests we have on here. Hey, Dan Harris was writing to me based upon me thinking the San Diego Padres, at least as of this writing, are putting themselves in position to win the World Series. And he writes to me, how should Padre fans hope their team wins the World Series? 4-game sweep or win game 7 in extra innings? Ideally not with a runner starting the inning on second base. Yeah, please, please. No more ghost runners on second. Dan, I get the question. And it's interesting that I was talking to my friend Greg Lee, who's a rabid Giants fan, and we were talking about his favorite San Francisco Giants World Series, and he has 3 of them to choose from in the last decade. And I was interested that the one that he gravitates towards is not the first one, the one that broke the Giants streak of not winning a World Series since they were in New York, but in the 2010 series against the Texas Rangers, a thought would be the one that he would gravitate towards the most. But the one he thinks about the most is the 2014 against Kansas City, mainly because that Game 7 is one of the all-time classic games. And having that do-or-die facing elimination while potentially clinching the World Series, getting the World Series to Salvador Perez versus Madison Bumgarner. If Perez hits a home run, the Royals win the World Series. If Bumgarner gets him out, the Giants win the World Series. Having that moment is the one that he clings to. I understand that there may be part of you that would love to see the Padres win in extra innings in Game 7 of the World Series. I think that's how they won in The Kid from Left Field, the Gary Coleman film, where the Padres defeated the White Sox in Game 7 of the World Series on a walk-off homer. I get that. Here's the deal. As a fan, you got to root for a sweep. You got to root for a sweep. And I remember that as a Red Sox fan in 04. Sorry, Stacey Gatsoulias, I'm bringing up 04. But also in 07. I remember in 04 when the Red Sox were on the verge of breaking the curse of the Bambino. There were some Red Sox fans I know who said, like, I hope they win the World Series at Fenway. I hope it's in Fenway. And I responded to them, then which games are you going to be rooting against the Red Sox? You have to root for the four-game sweep. Because if you lose one game, it could create momentum for the other side. I honestly think one of the reasons why the Chicago White Sox winning the World Series in 2004 didn't resonate in the pop culture and in terms of the way that the Cubs and the Red Sox championships did was there was no staring down elimination game that the White Sox faced. They swept the Red Sox, took five to beat the Angels, and they swept the Astros. There were some exciting games along the way, but it was they just stampeded through the postseason. And if you're a White Sox fan, you may feel a little bit ripped off that you didn't have that classic 04 ALCS or the classic 2016 Game 7 against the Indians that the Cubs had. But the fact of the matter is, that's on the other team. That's on the Red Sox, Angels, and Astros that they didn't put up a bigger fight. You got to root for your team because the only thing that matters if you're a fan like that and you're a Padre fan who's been living and dying is to get to the end and have the damn parade. It's on the other team to win games. So what should you wish for? You should wish for a four-game sweep. And I'll tell you what you should really hope for is the Padres don't have home field advantage in the World Series. If they don't have home field advantage in the World Series, there's no discussion there. Of course you want a sweep because you want them to win all the games and have the party on the field at Petco Field, Petco Park. Is it a park or a field? I can't remember. Always root for your team to win. But that comes to an interesting thing that Kyle King, who's at Kermit Kyle on Twitter, wrote to me. My topic thought is the validity of being a fan of one National League team and one American League team fan. Growing up, my number one team was the Red Sox, but my favorite team in the National League, in the NL, were the Expos. Ironic that 8 years later, after I moved to DC for college, they became the Nats. I was routinely called a traitor and faithful to the Red Sox, and I felt just being an overall fan of the game. If the Sox had ever played the Expos head-to-head, I would be a Sox fan, but I never saw any harm in rooting for a National League team. Thoughts? Okay, I have a definite point of view on this. First of all, I have loosened up my Red Sox fandom, and while I've adopted the Mariners, I am much more of just a baseball fan now. I love the game. I love the players. I love to see it unfold. And while I am adopting the Mariners as my team, as a human, I would love to see the Padres in the World Series. And I would love to see them in the World Series against a team like the A's, the Indians, or the White Sox. I think those are three teams that would be exciting. I think the A's and the Indians deserve a break. And I think this White Sox team is really thrilling to watch. And I feel that that's a positive way of looking at it. Now, who would I root for? It kind of depends on how it unfolds. Now, for years and years and years, obviously, I was a rabid Red Sox fan, but I did have a National League team, and that was the San Francisco Giants. The reason with the Giants is because my family moved in 1987 from the suburbs of Boston to the suburbs of San Francisco. My father grew up a rabid New York Giant fan, rooting for Willie Mays and Monty Irvin and all of them. And the nanosecond our plane landed in the San Francisco Bay Area, my father put his Giants hat back on and became a Giants fan for the rest of his life. And I got to see the Giants have heartbreaking losses, like in 87, losing 7 games to the Cardinals, like in 89 in the Earthquake World Series, in 93 winning 103 games but missing the playoffs, the 2002 World Series, which was devastating, the 2003 playoffs, which were underratedly devastating for the Giants, and then when they finally won, the exultation that my dad felt. And I went to World Series game in San Francisco, and I loved it. If you saw me during those years when the Giants won the World Series, you would have assumed I grew up my whole life as a Giants fan. They were my National League team. Now, when the Red Sox and Giants were each kind of like, you know, switching off years, they win the World Series 1 year, the other one's the World Series the next year, part of me wanted to see what would happen if the Giants and the Red Sox won the World Series, or were in the World Series against each other. And what would I root for? And I would have probably rooted for a Red Sox sweep because the Red Sox were my main team. I rooted for them over the Giants. But here's my mentality, okay? My mentality about all that. Especially, and again, your pal Sully's not going to get into current events. I'm not going to call it politics. Because there are other people who are better at that, more equipped at that, and where that is a forum for it. But let me just say this. We've had a rough few years. We've had a rough few months. Hell, we've had a rough 2021, and it's only the 10th. Whatever gives you happiness that doesn't hurt someone else, I'm for. That's a good way to move forward in life, isn't it? Beyond just baseball. If you're going to root for the Angels because you like Mike Trout, if you're going to root for the Yankees because your uncle grew up a big Yankee fan, if you're going to root for the A's because you think Brad Pitt is handsome and you liked Moneyball, if you're going to root for the Cardinals because a little cardinal every once in a while lands on a bird feeder in your backyard, whatever your reason for rooting for anything, and that gives you happiness, if that brings you joy, if you are rooting for the Mets because your person who was a bully to you growing up was a Phillies fan and you want them to be miserable. All right, that's a little schadenfreude, but do you what? Who am I to judge? I have plenty of schadenfreude as a baseball fan. Whatever brings you happiness as a fan, let's all agree. Let's just do it. Does it hurt anyone else? Are you rooting for players based upon your fantasy baseball team? Are you rooting for things that you just moved to a town and you want to adopt them? Are you going to root for a team because they happen to be good and they were bad last year and you're a front runner? Don't get on someone else for why they root for a team. If it makes them happy, even if they're bandwagon jumpers, who cares? If they're enjoying it, allow them to enjoy it. There are so many things to feel badly about. Don't make someone feel badly about something that makes them feel good, provided it isn't harming somebody else. That is why the very concept of a guilty pleasure, whether it's being a bandwagon fan in sports, if all of a sudden, like me, who I don't follow football at all, suddenly I say, hey, Buffalo Bills, they have a chance to win. Go Bills, go Bills. Of course I can't claim to have the same emotion invested in the Bills as someone who grew up in upstate New York. But if it gives me happiness, then let me do it. The concept of a guilty pleasure is something I'm going to flush down the toilet from 2021 on. If something gives you pleasure and it doesn't harm or hurt someone else, If you think Xanadu is the greatest movie ever made, you think We Built the City and Rock and Roll is the greatest song ever made, your favorite meal is Pop Rocks and Junior Mints, your favorite thing to do is to, play a video game or make fart jokes. I don't care. Does it harm someone else? Does it give you happiness? We all need more happiness, and we shouldn't feel guilt about that. So this is my long-winded and somewhat preachy way of answering your question, Kyle King. Don't let anyone get you down about that. You're not a traitor. You're enjoying your life. What does it say about them that they're trying to stop you from that? And what I really hope makes you enjoy life is listening to this podcast, which I'm going to be doing all throughout the off season. You know, the good folks at Locked On said, I only have to do 3 a week during the off season. And some weeks I may only do 3, but I'm going to continue to try to do 5, as many as possible. Do you know why? This gives me pleasure. So go to the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app and like me on all the places where you listen to podcasts. And if you have a topic for the Sunday request, please, please, please send it my way via Twitter at Sully Baseball. Trying to talk baseball, but in the end, trying to give you advice on how to live life. This is Locked On MLB for the 10th day of January, 2021. Be safe out there. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.